Welcome to the Marketing Study Lab podcast with me, Peter Sumpton, the Lego master of marketing and marketing consultant, providing you with the building blocks you need to be a successful marketer. This intro lasts about 1 minute, so feel free to skip forward if you've heard all this before. I seriously won't be offended. If you're new to the show, we chat to amazing people to give you practical advice you can implement right now that will make you and your marketing truly awesome. The conversations we have will lead you to the actionable marketing knowledge you've been craving, and now you've found it, so you can relax and enjoy the rest of the show. Thanks to all those that have left a 5-star Apple Podcast review. It's the best way to support what I'm trying to do here. If you have a burning marketing question, you can catch me on LinkedIn. I know I'm supposed to say the links are in the show notes, but let's face it, you've got better things to do than try and find those pesky show notes right now. Enough of the show intro. Let's get on with introducing our guest. This is part 4 of 6. Over the next 6 weeks, or the next 3 weeks if you listen to this for the first time, we'll have a slightly different feel on the podcast. It's just going to be me, myself, and I, as I chat through 6 of the most important and influential theories within strategic marketing. This 6-part series is actually the second season in reviewing, explaining, and demonstrating how to use these powerful marketing tools, which is the first time I've shared it on the podcast. But why am I doing this now? Well, I've partnered up with Professional Academy, intro to them later, to bring all those aspiring marketers 6 explainer live episodes, which you can catch on a Thursday. The links, as always, are in the show notes. This has been put together to make you a better all-round marketer, from auditing right through to controls and measurement. This week, we take a look at segmentation, targeting, and positioning, STP, as well as building your own customer persona. Hello, 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 and welcome yet again to this second series of Marketing Theories Explained. In the first series, we looked more at the tactical elements, whereas in this series, we're looking at strategical elements of marketing, the models and theories that are going to essentially make you a better marketer. We'll look at how to apply them, what they mean, give you some examples. Some of them might be hypothetical, but hopefully you'll resonate with some of the things that we talk about. So first and foremost, thank you for Professional Academy for allowing me to do this and taking their stage, their limelight for 20 minutes, half an hour. And thank you so much for joining me as well. Hopefully I can add some value to this. Professional Academy are a strategic partner of the CIM, the Chartered Institute of Marketing, and are a globally recognized provider of marketing training and qualifications, but also apprenticeships. And I'm proud to be associated with them and have been for a long time, which I'll touch upon now. My name is Peter Sumpton. I'm the Lego Master of Marketing. I like to turn those little marketing bricks that are dotted around on the floor that are frustrating and you don't know how they all connect or where they all go within the grand scheme of your business, create something fun, understandable, unique, exciting, but also that works for your business that will return an ROI. I've been tutoring for Professional Academy for around about 10 years now, La Decima, and I'm currently assisting with the apprenticeships and the CIM qualifications that Professional Academy offer. Proud to do so. I also offer consultancy work as well. And my main aim in life is to highlight to as many businesses as possible the value and the benefit of having a marketing orientated and focused approach and company. So a little intro to this series. What are we trying to do within this marketing strategy theory explained series, of which this is the 4th one out of 6? You run out of time to see my wonderful face on a Thursday. Well, we're starting with analysis and auditing, which we looked at in the previous 3 sessions. And we're going right through to control and measurement. But these next 2 episodes, this one and number 5, are really focused on that strategy, building that strategic direction and having that strategic fit, not just with your company, but with your audience as well. Like I said, if you've got any questions, drop them in the comments. and I'll answer them at the end of this session. So what are we going to look at today? We're going to be looking at STP and customer persona, what it is and why it's important. So said an acronym there, already acronyms, they're everywhere in marketing, but let me highlight what that acronym is first of all, and then let's get on to discussing how we actually implement that marketing. Sorry, how we actually implement what we're talking about there. Sorry, I was doing admin live on air, shouldn't do that. So STP, it stands for segmentation, targeting, and positioning, as you can see on the screen. What this allows us to do is create clarity on who our target market is and what competitive position we need to succeed within a particular subset of our overall market. A lot of marketing fluffy words there, and don't worry, we'll uncover it all. What we'll also look at today is a customer persona. And what a customer persona is a detailed representation of a specific element within a target market or within an actual market. It gives you clarity on identifying who your ideal client truly is. And we can get massively detailed down to the different colored chocolate that they like to eat. More on that later. So what are we looking to do here? Number one, we're looking to segment the market. Number two, we're looking to target the best segment that we've realized, our best customers. Number three, we're looking to develop a persona for these customers to know and understand them, to make them real, to have them sat in our meeting room when we're discussing how we can best serve them. And finally, we're going to position our offering for a competitive advantage. Right, let's start off by taking a deep dive into STP, segmentation, targeting, and positioning. First thing to think about with segmentation is that you're never going to please everyone, and neither do you want to be fair. If you want to know how important that is, look up a guy called Kevin Kelly. So he talks about 1,000 true fans, and Seth Godin always mentions this. And this is how you should view your segmentation, not in subsets of 1,000, but more importantly, focusing on that smallest viable audience that you can serve that have similar attributes, a segment of your market, if you like. But how do we do this segmentation? Well, what we want to do is divide our customers or the entire market into groups of people, potential customers, prospects, into groups of people with common characteristics, needs, wants, desires. These characteristics can be demographic, geographic, behavioral, psychographic, any element that will divide a bigger subset into different segments you can utilize at this point. Let's look at an example of segmentation. So what I'm going to do here is I'm going to use a distribution company, a UK-wide distribution company. If they were looking to segment their market, they might do it on geographical location. Makes sense, because they're distributing. They might do it on status, age of individuals, average spend of individuals. Now, you might be thinking, that's great, but I work in the B2B sector, and that's absolutely fine. We can segment within the B2B sector as well. So instead of age, we might look at size of business. We might look at turnover. We might look at the different types of products. If we're doing that B2B and we're distributing to B2B customers. Geographical location, absolutely 100%. So just to summarize, with segmentation, think of it like this. Analogy coming up, by the way. So think of it as if you have a big bag of M&Ms, and that is your market in general. That is your whole market. And you're going to divide them by color: green, red, blue, brown, yellow. Think that's it? Let me know if I've missed out any M's, and apologies, all M&Ms are made equal. Think of it like that. You're dividing your bag of M&Ms by color. You could even divide it by size after that if you want to get really detailed. But that is a segment of your marketplace. Okay, let's move on to targeting. So we've segmented. We've got our bag of M&Ms. We've segmented it by color, or we've done this from a distribution network into geographical location and size of spend, that type of stuff. What do we do now? Well, we move on to targeting. It's decision time. You've got all these segments. You could target them all, depending on the size of your organization, the number of people you have working on the marketing department. But it's more likely that you want to focus on which segment is most attractive, which has the best strategic fit, if you like. Again, think about your bag of M&Ms. Green might be better than blue, although, as we all know, red is the clear and obvious color of choice always. It's a football reference for anybody that doesn't know me or hasn't joined in before. But in our targeting, what we need to do is we need to focus on a singular segment of the market. So this could include profitability. It could include size. That's how we're going to target potential growth. It could be that we look at it from a negative point of view and we go, okay, what are the potential barriers here? What are the barriers that stop us targeting a certain segment? It could be legal. It could be geographical. And then you put them aside and you focus on the other segments. So segments and targeting are kind of intertwined, if you like. They're interlocked between each other. You wouldn't really segment without doing the targeting, and you can't do the targeting without the segmentation. So if we continue to use this distribution example, what we found is that geographically, our best average spend per customer is twice as far away as the next best paying set of customers. So we could do a quick calculation, a quick analysis, and I'm not going to do that here, but we could do a quick calculation, quick analysis, and it'll tell you which segment, the furthest one away or the one that's closer, should be the main target through lifetime customer value and return on investment. Now, once we've done that, and once we know who we're going to target, then we can look to develop a customer persona, get into detail about this target market, not just what they got in common, but what they like to do, what their preferences are. We're going to go real detail, but that's for a little bit later on. I want to finish the segmentation targeting positioning acronym model, STP, before we move on to that. So the final part, positioning. Now, this is important because we've segmented and we've targeted. Now we move on to positioning, which is a bit of a step change, if you like. So how do we do this? We've understood our target market, and we can consider external factors now. We bring these in and where we fit within our own marketplace. Now, the way we do that is we can utilize something we call a positioning map, and we'll come onto that in a moment. You may remember those from a few episodes ago. What we want to do is use this type of map to highlight any gaps in the market and develop a position that creates a competitive advantage for our business or us as an individual. It should never be a one-size-fits-all, sit-in-the-middle type of approach, unless your target market want that from the type of company that you are. So let's take a quick look at one of these positioning maps. And this is the final time I'll use distribution as an example, but it's kind of worked so far. So let's carry it on, shall we? So like I said, the positioning map, as you can see on the screen, goes way back to session one when we were looking at the marketing audit. So check out session one on Professional Academy's YouTube channel if you haven't already. We were looking at the marketing audit. And we actually discussed positioning maps and where they fit in. But what we're doing here is showing where our competitors fit on two various axes. In this instance, it's delivery time and maximum weight. The longer to the right it goes, or the further to the right or the top it goes, the longer the delivery time, or the heavier the items you're willing to carry. So as you can see on the screen, apologies if you're listening to the podcast, but as you can see on the screen, we have got competitors that have carry weighted products that have various delivery times, short and long. But in the top left, no competitor has same day delivery or a very quick delivery while carrying the maximum weight possible. So what will this give you? Well, we can place ourselves in this quadrant, in this section. And as the distribution company, that is our competitive advantage. Same day delivery, heavy objects delivered on the same day. And that is how we'd utilize our positioning map. So now look what we've done, what we've done so far. We've segmented our marketplace. We know who we're targeting. And now we've got a competitive position, something that we know solves our target market's problem. What we want to do now is get to know our target market that little bit better, get a little bit cozy, have a brew with them, maybe invite them into our home, but maybe not that far, invite them into our office. Well, even if we can do that nowadays. Anyway, I'm getting bogged down in politics and logistics. Let's not do that. Let's focus this final section on persona. So we know the segment that provides the best strategic fit, and we even know where we're going to position ourselves in the market. But how do you know what type of comms is going to resonate with our audience? We know we're a good strategic fit. We know that's the best target audience for us. But how do we get our audience to go, yep, you're the company for me? Even in a B2B space, personas have their part to play. Because remember, humans buy from humans. So it's as important to create a persona in the B2B space as it is B2C. But I suppose the question we need to answer now is, how do you build a persona? Well, there's one of two ways I'd like to highlight. There's actually three, because you could do a blend of these two ways. But one of them is using robust research to detail what your target market is made up of, the facts, the figures, the numbers, the undeniable data that we have at our disposal. The second one is looking at a persona which is more akin to an ideal client. If someone was to walk through the door, who would you want to walk through that door and say, you're the company for me, you're the company I want to work for, here's all my cash, happy to work with you? Now, you might be saying everyone or anyone, but that's rubbish. Fully defend that being rubbishness, because it isn't anyone. So somebody could hand over a wad of cash for you to solve their problems. But what if they're heavily in debt? What if that cash doesn't stack up? What if that's the only time they spend the money with you? Wouldn't it be better creating a relationship with somebody you could trust going forward for longer lifetime customer value? Those types of elements we need to consider. Is it worth our while? Right, okay. So for the final time, we'll look at two different types of persona building, through fact and through fiction. So the first one's through fact. So how do we do this? Where do we get our information from? Well, how about we talk to our customers? That would be a good start, wouldn't it? Let's have a little chat to our customers. This can be done through surveys, interviews, but also think of what's at our disposal readily available. The internal resources, check out analytical programs, Google Analytics, a CRM system, previous sales, monetary values, what they've purchased beforehand. Then once we've done that, we can look at external resources. We can look at other platforms where data is gathered, such as social platforms, even exhibitions that we might have sponsored. What do their delegate list look like? What information can we, GDPR compliant, of course, can we gather through those types of lists? And using this data can help us build a persona that's built on fact. If we do this, we should be able to answer those key core, undeniably data-driven information elements. Demographics, the age or company, market share, geographical location, digital habits, purchase history. Now, the only issue we've got here is that anything other than anything that's data-driven, and we could have some degree of qualitative research in there, but it would be anecdotal for us to do that. And that's okay, because that is a blended version. So we've got the data, we add hypothetical or anecdotal or what we feel is right to that mix. And that's absolutely fine. That'll give you a blended persona. But that doesn't dive deep enough. So the second part of this, the second part that we're going to look at is a persona through fiction. Now, that seems a bit weird. Why would I develop a persona through fiction? What's the point in that? Well, we try to bring our persona to life, who our ideal client would be. Who do we specifically want to walk through our door? So we can do that through numbers and figures, but that's more in hindsight. That's previously who we've worked with, and that's fantastic, brilliant. But what about going forward? What if you're going to change direction? Where are we going to get that data from? Well, we can build a persona through fiction. It's an image of who's going to walk through that door. So how do we do this? Well, we need to consider asking ourselves who this person might be, and we go detailed here. Whereas building on fact, we may not get down to these specifics. With fiction, we can elaborate and be creative. So here's a list of questions that you want to be asking yourself when it comes to a fictional ideal client. What are their pain points? Who are they? Their marital status, their age, their sex, their location. What solutions do they look for? What do they do at the weekend? What hobbies do they have? What's their job? What do they earn? What car do they drive? What films, TV programs, books, entertainment do they enjoy? What's their favorite color M&M? Those things will help build up a persona. And once we do that, we have this wonderful picture in our mind's eye or on screen of what that person looks like. But why do we do this? And who does it actually help doing this? Well, if we can start to build a picture of who our ideal client, our customer persona, regardless of if it's built on fact or fiction, is, then we can start to communicate or build communications that resonate with those people, with those individuals. So it might sound silly saying their favorite color M&M, but if their favorite color M&M is red, and it clearly will be, it always is, if their favorite color M&M is red, we could probably create comms around or utilizing the color red. That sounds stupid, but it resonates. So think about your favorite brand. They will resonate with you. So let's take M&Ms for the final time. Let's take M&Ms. And I'm pretty sure if people aren't wanting M&Ms right now, you're a bit crazy, but pick out the red ones and just eat those. If you think about what they stand for or what their brand resonates, they're fun. They don't take themselves too seriously. They're colorful. They have a laugh. Well, this is the same with their target market. It resonates in their comms and it resonates with their target market, young and old as well. If you've seen the TV, if you've seen the advert on TV where the M&Ms are in bed with somebody's girlfriend or wife or whatever it might be, that isn't really for somebody younger, although M&Ms is aimed at somebody younger. So clearly they're trying to resonate with an older audience. So building up that persona, you can really start to understand where you can resonate with your audience. So let's just summarize. Segmentation, targeting, and positioning helps you develop a competitive position. You utilize it with the intention of targeting a specific group more efficiently and effectively. And this three-step approach, along with creating a customer persona, helps the whole business gain clarity around the most profitable areas within their market. If you don't know the answer to things like who's your target market, what's your competitive advantage, you're going to become redundant and you're going to lose sight of the bigger picture here. So focus on those and who you're trying to serve. Categorize your market into subsets, each with similar features. Review these and focus on the target or individual groups that are going to be more profitable or make sense, have a strategic fit. Develop a persona and gain clarity on who your target market is, and then look at your market and consider where that sweet spot would be between your target market's needs and wants, what you do best as an organization, as a company, as a brand, and any gaps that might be in the market. And then you can decide whether to defend or attack. Think about playing guess who. Wouldn't it be a lot easier if we knew who was on the card in the first place? That way, it'd take all the guesswork out of it. But I suppose that wouldn't be much fun in a way. So you can do that, but the game wouldn't really last very long. Bad analogy, I suppose. But I'm going to finish on that analogy. So to close, first of all, thank you so, so much for watching. Next week, we're going to be looking at Ansoff's Matrix. So we're going mega, mega strategic. It's developed in the 1960s, I think. Correct me if I'm wrong. Developed in the 1960s, and it still holds a presence today. So a bit more about this series. It can be found on Professional Academy's YouTube channel. If you enjoyed today, check it out. There's 9 others. Wow, 9. Blimey. Or check out the blog post to accompany the series, and all the links can be found on their website. So finally, from myself and professional marketing, happy marketing, and it's question time. Okay, right, let me check any questions out that we might have. Again, apologies if I don't get round to it, or apologies if I don't see your questions. Okay. So we've got a few here. So, Adam. Adam says, if I have no customer data, where can I start? That is absolutely brilliant. So we covered a few points in way, way back when I was driveling on about segmentation and persona. Well, a great place to start is anything internally that you can get your hands on. So look at financial records. Like, even if it's just as basic as on a customer level, how much they've spent, simple as that, work out average order value first and foremost. Utilize free tools that the likes of Facebook have. Remember, Facebook probably have more information about us as individuals as governments do. So it makes sense to go to them to look at developing a target audience or what they like. And Facebook's good for doing that. The back end of it's really good, really interesting for doing that. But also look at other areas. So if you've got a CRM, for example, internally, look at trade associations or exhibitions. Like I mentioned exhibitions, trade associations, really good. They will have a list of their members and probably a lot of detail on their members. And they probably publish papers about what's going on in the market. So there's loads of information we can gather, anything where we can build a persona from, or through fact or fiction, it doesn't matter, anything that we can gather information to better target those people we're trying to serve. Absolutely. Okay, cool. Hopefully, Adam, that answered the question. Right. There's one from Sylvia. Which is better, factual or fictional personas? Either. I prefer a blend. So if you think about what we're doing there, we are saying from a factual point of view, these are the people that we can serve and we're probably serving already, or get a good indication about who knows, likes and trusts us straight away through the likes of Google Analytics and internal data. But doing the fictional part, well, it's a bit of fun, really, but it allows us to get creative. And that creativity in marketing is hugely important. And even when Mark Ritson did his, can't remember what the talk was called, but when Mark Ritson did his talk, he spoke about how important creativity is, but not without all the theory behind it. So creativity is hugely important. So I do a mixture of both. There's no right or wrong answer there, Sylvia, I'm afraid. So just try them. If you haven't got the data, look at who you want to walk through the door, and then do some research about that type of person. So for example, if you found out or you thought that your target market liked blue M&Ms, boo, then have a look online to see what type of people eat blue M&Ms. You know, there's lots of data out there, so use it effectively. Okay, so Steve says, how important is tone when communicating with your persona? Well, this comes back to understanding the target market. So if we look at a emotional or an irrational purchase, like that could be huge to understand how our target market, our segment, see what we do as a business, the products or the service that we sell. So if there are more emotional ties, then the tone has to resonate with that emotion. If it's more of a fast-moving consumer good, milk is always my example, then how do you put some emotion on milk? I suppose you can if you've got an affinity to cows or milk or anything like that. But at the end of the day, it's going to be more of a rational purchase. So our tone when it comes to getting that across should be more rational. Having said that, just because it's a rational purchase doesn't mean we can't have add a bit of fun into our creative. If you think about milk again and Cravendale, it could still even be their strap line, something along the lines of, it's so good, even the cows want it back. And they had adverts where cows were trying to get, going in supermarkets, trying to get Cravendale off the shelf and take it back. So just because it's a rational purchase doesn't mean we can't add that sense of humor, but it's knowing and understanding when we can add that appeal into our comms and understanding what our target market wants to see. That allows us to do that. And we only do that through our research. Notice how everything comes back to research? It's true. As marketers, standing on my soapbox here, but as marketers, we are stuck in this. We need to do something now. We need to create communication. We need to be seen on all platforms, but we need to get the research right first. So please, please, please do that first. Okay. Katie says, great M&Ms and guess who in allergies. Thank you. Nice one, Katie. Thank you so, so much for joining us. But she's got a question as well. So hopefully this doesn't trip me up. And this is the last question. I volunteer for a non-profit that looks at the environment. Nice one. Good stuff. We require donations. Does it make sense to do personas? How? That's another question. How? So does it make sense to do personas? If so, how? As this is a different industry, a non-profit. This is a different industry, so it's non-profit, it's the industry. Absolutely, 100%. So if you're for-profit, not-for-profit, regardless of your organization or who you are, you should be building a persona. Why is that important for not-profit? Well, if you know, and again, this goes back to tone, I suppose, and emotional appeal. So if you know what type of people are more likely to donate to an environmental charity and build a picture of what they do at weekends, what they like watching, where they live, those types of things, then you can target them more specifically, more detailed, and try to, you're not trying to convince them to make a donation. You're just trying to resonate with them enough that they think you are donationable. Is that a word? So what you want to know and understand is why do they donate? I suppose that's the key thing in your persona. Why do they donate? Why is your environmental nonprofit important to them? Why do they care about the environment? So for example, and I know you haven't gone into much detail, but are they more concerned about water? Are they more concerned about trees? Are they more concerned about pollution? Are they more concerned about cars? You know, it depends, and link that to what you're doing creatively, and link that and look at the research behind it, and look at the type of people that are reading that research or want to know that research. Ask. I mean, you must have donors already, so ask them, why did you donate? What do you think is a reasonable donation? Because you don't want to be going to your persona and thinking they've got mega money to spend and £50 a month is a reasonable donation, where £50 a month is you know, living for some people. So those are the types of things you need to be looking at. Average donation, you know, age range. You must have some kind of database. And if you don't, start building one from donations, ask small questions and build from there. Okay, so if that doesn't answer your question, Katie, or you want a bit more context to that, you know, please reach out to Professional Academy or myself. Check me out on LinkedIn. No problem, and we can go into a bit more detail. So I think that's it. I thought this was going to be a short one, and I think it's been the longest one we've done. So thank you very much for staying with me. Finally, again, from me and Professional Academy, enjoy the rest of your day and happy marketing. We'll be right back. thank you so much for joining us today on Marketing Study Lab. It really means the world that you're listening to this out there. And hopefully I've provided you some value. If you're looking to know more about what Marketing Study Lab does and is about, go to marketingstudylab.co.uk or get in touch with me personally, LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, or feel free to email me at peter@marketingstudylab.co.uk. Happy marketing.